And welcome back to The Reducer. Proudly not on Instagram, not on Twitter, not on Facebook, and not interested in hearing from you because you listen to the worst football podcast there is. Welcome back to The Reducer. I am lead scum, Howard H. Smith, and and my good friend, Dave Rothney, the Man City fan. Morning, Dave.
All right. Hello.
That literally sounds... I can... listeners, he's not in bed, okay? I promise you he is dressed. He is dressed.
Stretching after last night.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. And then Liverpool fan David Klein.
Hello.
Hello. So I think we should start with Mr. Rothney because it is the day after Man City won at Arsenal 3-1. After saying just weeks ago, I'm going to say it now, Man City are not going to win the league. How are you feeling this morning, Dave?
Yeah, good. I mean, fair play. Am I allowed to say that? Man City fan. Fair play. I mean, we were brilliant in the second half. It was one of those, been waiting for it all season when we turn up and do it. And it was funny that Pep overthought it, obviously, in the first half, did his Pep thing. Bernardo Silva left back, but the good thing was in the Cancelo position. If only we had somebody that could play in that position. We don't now. But at the end of the game, the end of the game, he was good, wasn't he, Pep? He said, "They said, what did you change? What was wrong in the first half?" He said, "My tactics. I tried something new, and it was horrible."
Love it. The Bielsa School of Press Conference.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
What was wrong with the first half? My tactics. Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm not sure he'd have said that if we'd have lost, but we can all be magnanimous in victory. But yeah, it was good. Happy. I mean, you know, I'm a half empty kind of a guy. I thought, you know, I'd not seen anything to suggest that we were going to win the title.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we're going to win it now, but it's a lot better now, isn't it? Level on points, I've got a game in hand. It's a proper...
Like
we're in touching now. Not of touching distance, not of winning, but of, you know, of being genuine contenders.
My friend's an Arsenal fan. He's like, oh, we'll bottle it, we'll bottle it. And this was when they were like, they looked like they were going running away with it a few weeks ago. And now, sorry, I saw him earlier. Yeah, I told you, we're bottling it. Which is like...
Can I just say, what a mindset, though. Because let's just take a brief journey into the mind of the pessimist. Half empty is not necessarily pessimism, Mr. Rothney, and I know you're not a pessimist because I couldn't work with you. But let's just go into the mind of a pessimist. The only time they're happy is when everybody else is miserable. Pessimists say things like, An optimist never gets a nice surprise. True, but a pessimist eventually drives all their friends and close family away and dies alone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there is that too.
I like the turning you've taken with this podcast, Howard. It's good. My football.
A bit of life coach going on.
Let's get into the old...
Just to say that if you have no friends or you seem to be like your family don't come around so often and your friends don't seem to want to meet up with you so much, you're a fucking pessimist and you make everybody miserable around you. When you turn up, you will slowly get invited to less and less and less and die alone with no friends and family.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, I'm not a pessimist.
Half empty, half full. That's not pessimism.
It's it's just... I think you can be surprised if you're an optimist. Totally. It's just because you can't...
Oh, it's a bullshit concept right out the gate because this is what pessimists deal in, because they'll try anything to build their world view. I mean, here's another one. Have you ever seen a pessimist lead a group of people or win anything? Have you ever had some, like, you know, someone stood, you know, they've won it and they've gone, yeah, I never thought I'd win this. No. To be honest, didn't think I was good enough. No. Because you need some sort of inner fire, inner desire, and inner confidence and inner belief. And that is truly where the pessimist lacks. It's the inner belief. They don't believe in themselves. So why should anybody else? The world shit, yada, yada, yada. This has fucking tangented, hasn't it? And that's not even a fucking word. I just made it up.
So talking of pessimism, I mean, a week ago, over a week ago, most of the channels on YouTube that I follow, Liverpool fans. That's it. Klopp out, get rid of him. And then we beat Everton, and it's like we're going to win the league again. It's almost like bipolar. Bipolarism for football fans.
That's true.
And I take the Jurgen Klopp line. He said, maybe I wasn't as good as everyone said I was, but now I'm not as bad as everyone's saying I am. And it's like there's this middle ground. It's like it's football, and you can never predict, as we know. So things can change literally after one game. You know, your mood lifts, everything's different, the world's a better place. So, I mean, I do enjoy, I mean, I am not a pessimist by nature, but when it comes to football, I am. But I'm glass half empty, but I do enjoy reveling in the misery.
I was going to say, yeah, you're not a pessimist. Funny. Yeah, you positively revel in misery.
I don't actually mean it. I
know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah. It's kind of
a defense mechanism.
But also, at the risk of derailing your fine work, I do have to give you an internal standing ovation for the way you managed to wrangle the whole pessimism thing back to Liverpool and get us back on topic. It's beautiful. Even threw in bipolar just to show off. I thought that was fantastic. Great broadcasting from the Klein there. He brought the podcast under his spell.
I thought we'd gone off message a little bit there. So
I assume bipolar is just one of Guardiola's new tactical inverted fullbacks and bipolar midfielders.
Well, before we move off Man City altogether, one thing I did want to mention from last night, which I'm sure is going to be pointed out by many a pundit, is there's no substitute for quality. Look at your three goal scorers: De Bruyne, Grealish, Haaland.
Haaland.
100 million, 50 million bargain, who should have been fucking a billion. And Kevin De Bruyne, haha, Jose, turns out you're a shit judge of player. So, I mean, De Bruyne's goal was like, it's easy. Most people watching football will go, oh, good goal. People who've played football, as all three of us have, go, fucking hell.
I know, it's unbelievable.
Fuck it. How is that not in the car park? How's that not just crashed down into a hot dog stand, you know?
Yeah.
On Etihad Way or wherever the fuck it is.
But also the thing about that goal is also that was the only thing he could have done. Because if he'd have actually taken a touch, which is what 99% of other people would have done, the fullback would have come across, Ramsdale would have blocked him, he would have forced him out wide. But I mean, not only did he think, well, this is the only thing I can do, he executed it perfectly. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Yes, it was a mistake by the defender, but oh.
Also, one thing I noticed when Grealish scored, not only the fact that he scored the goal, and a slight deflection, but it's a goal. And but I noticed, like, Grealish is playing in all the big games. He is clearly well and truly on message and in Pep's good books at the moment. He clearly is. Because the thing is, I think we're apt to go, oh, Haaland, oh, De Bruyne. And it's like, well, you know, Grealish is English. Let's celebrate him as well. And I think he's putting in the hours. He's putting in the effort. He's putting in the yards. You know, and definitely, I think he's doing more tracking back. I saw an interview with him, and he was like, you know, he was saying, well, you know, I thought I was going to come here and loads of chances. I was just going to be banging goals in all the time, you know. But it turns out there's a lot more to it, and I've had to change me game. Because that's the best thing about the Brummie accent is the word game, which becomes gam, which is possibly yesterday's gam.
No, you're right. Well, you're right. I totally agree. He's keeping Foden out of the team, you know, at the moment, which tells you all you need to know. But Howard, I wanted to ask you, and we can get on to, by the way, you can criticise me as much as you like about financial fair play, because I wasn't here last week, so I don't mind taking it on behalf of all City fans.
Do you mean get stuck into the financial journalist who is a City fan? Do you mean that one?
mate,
we've set aside a few days for that.
Yeah, that's fine. You'll have your day in court. But I wanted to ask about, because I wasn't here last week, so Jesse Marsh, I mean, not only the departure from Leeds, yeah, but the potential appointment at Southampton, which now is off the cards. I mean, what sort of? I remember you saying a couple of weeks ago, Howard, that Jesse Marsh, it's like he's not a football manager. It's like he's like a salesman. So what is Jesse Marsh?
Purveyor of fridge magnet philosophy. He's the patron saint of press conferences. He basically talked. I mean, look at the first interview he did after the first game at Leeds, and his interview he did at the last game at Leeds, and I think you find pretty much the same narrative, which is almost an admission of his own failings. You know, he's like, yeah, you know, we got to get the stress away from the players. You know, I'm trying with the group, and we're doing everything we can, and I got to get these boys, you know, young players, you know, and it's like, well, you signed off on buying young players, and he's like, you know, and when he arrived, he was saying that the players were finding it difficult to play under the pressure and stress of the situation, and just before he left, he was saying that there was pressure and stress, and it's like, so you've just fucking admitted that it's not working. Because we're back where we started. And some would say never got very far away from it. Other than the 3-0 win against Chelsea, who turned out to be shit and sacked Tuchel a few weeks later, other than the 3-0 demolition of Chelsea, there's never been anything there. It's literally just been bluster. The guy talks a good game. The minute he left, a managerless 11 against Man United went 2-0 up and looked like a proper team. Even when he came back to 2-2, there was no like I was watching it with my girlfriend and I said, look, I think we're going to do well to hang on to this. I thought we looked solid as a fucking rock. You know, we looked like a proper team. And again at the weekend in the return fixture, again we bossed it. And I just think there's a really good squad there. And I really don't think we're going to go down. And literally what this is, it now looks like the club would rather have no manager at all than have Jesse Marsh stay. But
yeah,
what it's more like is the fact that I think they thought we've got Corbran, we've got Guy Rayo Vallecano, we've got Slot in Holland. One of them will want it. One of them will take it. Go on, fuck off, Jesse. And then all three have gone, well, two, one has said no. One's club has said no. And Corbran, the absolute shoo-in, we only offered him an 18-month deal. So he told us to fuck off and signed a contract extension at West Brom. So, but to answer your question, bit of a tangent, which is the theme of today's show.
That's fine.
Southampton, I think, see someone in the Red Bull mode from the Red Bull camp.
Mm. He's got a nerve on him, though, hasn't he? He wanted a long contract at Southampton. It's like, mate, you've just been sacked. Take what's on the table. And see how you get on.
And not only that, but anybody will tell you that, I mean, we again, people will say we were over loyal to Bielsa and that meant Marsh's job was harder. We were over loyal to Marsh and now whoever comes in's job is harder. But that's how we roll. We don't appoint short term. So we really are, you know, that's the right mode of thinking. Truth is, we should have got rid of him as soon as in the World Cup break. Yeah. And apparently around Christmas time, there was a bust up and that was true. And one player was heard to say to Phil Hay, the Athletic Leeds reporter, relegation should be fun this year. I think they'd stopped believing into his tactics. And the thing is that he was brought in as this so-called ideal follow-up / replacement for Bielsa. But there's no evidence of that. For a start, he plays down the middle. He plays without width. Minimum width is one of his messages. And what you saw under his management was teams just camp in the middle and try and push us wide. Yeah. And it's
ridiculous.
Just so easy to beat. And that his final game, the Forest game, just sums it up. You know, given extra players, really good squad, played all right, but all what's his name at Forest? Is it Jones?
Cooper.
Cooper, that's it. All I know is he's a handsome chap.
Yeah, Jones was Southampton. Who's that's like, yeah, no longer with us.
Oh, never mind. Yeah. What's his name? What's his name again?
No, he's doing an impression, by the way, of Cooper, which is good.
Face like a scarecrow. It looks like it's been out. He looks like he's been out in the field, and the crows have been at him for a few months. But all he had to do was make one substitution at half time, and that was the end of it. Yeah, and Marsh just did nothing. Just took some players off, put some other players on, and went, oh, fucking hell, you know, try and get a goal, will you?
And I know, so a couple of things. It's good that thank you for explaining that to me, because I was thinking, why doesn't anybody want the Leeds job? Because, you know, there's other club jobs, and you look at, yeah, you wouldn't go there, you wouldn't go there. Everton would have fallen into that category, but they've got a Sean Dyche now. So I thought, why hasn't anybody taken the Leeds job? But you just explained to me why, that there was a club that wouldn't let their manager go, and then there was Cole Brown, we wouldn't give him a long enough deal. So that's understandable. So, but Southampton, I mean, they've got a weird, funny judge of character. They're sort of like your mate who picks, like, their choice of partner is always slightly iffy. I mean, I quite like Ralph Hasselhuth, or whatever he's called. I thought, yeah, I liked him, but then I went with Nathan Jones, who has been kind of quite unfairly tarred, I suppose, as the David Brent of football management. And he's out the door. And now they've gone for Jesse. I mean, somebody needs. Is everything all right at home? You want to say to the head of director of football there?
Well, two things. Firstly, the guy who appoints manager and suggested Jones is also the same guy who used to work at Brentford and got Thomas Frank in. Right, so, but it's a data model. And for me, where the data model is flawed is he's applied his data model to the Championship and got Jones in. Well, it's not the Premier League, is it? It's like, I mean, come on. If you look at any fucking data sets, you need to use a data set that a baseline is relevant to your data set, which means only a Premier League data set is relevant. It's like, he's done all of this. Yes, but it's in the Championship.
Was he before? Was he at Watford?
Luton.
Luton. He also went from Luton to Stoke. Job was too big for him. Got sacked. Went back to Luton. Came away. I tell you what, though, fucking hell. Press conferences. They're going to go from Nathan Jones, who wouldn't shut up talking absolute gibberish, to Jesse Marsh, who won't shut up and talks absolute gibberish. So it'll be like night and day. It'll just merge beautifully.
But I was reading this story about, is it Nathan Jones? I keep calling him Nathan Jones. Is that his name?
It is. And by the way, I'm not sure if you heard last week's episode, but I think you'll find the actual description of Nathan Jones, which came up last week, is the definitive, which is basically Nathan Jones is the equivalent if you're a player at Southampton, it's the equivalent of when the games teacher is off and another teacher takes games.
Yeah, yeah.
And they walk in and they're wearing the wrong clothes. Straight away, you're all like, we're in here.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just got the authority of a supply teacher.
Yeah, yeah. And they say something like, so what do you normally do? And straight away, you're like,
that's great. What do we normally do? That's brilliant. Just do some colouring.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we play football? Right, cross country run. Yeah.
So I just wanted to say, I don't think you mentioned this story. I read a great story about Nathan Jones. So I just wanted to crowbar it in that when he was at, I think it was Martin Samuel was saying that, you know, that he was too kind of intimidated by the Premier League and didn't want to, you know, he pussyfooted around the players too much and showed them too much respect. To your point, really, Howard, that he wasn't really a Premier League manager, because that's one of the things you need. You need that fear and respect for these, you know, instill fear into these millionaires. And he contrasted this was when I think he was at Luton or one of his earlier jobs, that he was concerned that the lads were playing too much table tennis and they weren't focusing enough on the game. So what Nathan Jones did is he took the table tennis table out of the games room, dragged it out into the centre of the pitch and set fire to it.
Well, we're going to have to play a little bit of tennis here, OK, because the actual story is that's the urban myth. The story is, he said, I don't like the table tennis culture in this club, and had the table tennis packed away, the table tennis table packed away, and refused to let the lads play it. But the story got out that he burned it in the middle of the pitch. They then got a phone call from an angry fan group who bought the table tennis table, saying, what the fuck have you done with the table tennis table we bought you? What the hell have you burned it for? That costs good money. And they were like, no, it's in the cupboard. And they were, are you sure? So they had to come down, this fans group came down to Luton to make sure that it hadn't been burned.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you for clearing that up. That's super.
It's just as mad, though.
Yeah, I think it sums it up, though, that Nathan Jones, it shows you're in the wrong job where you're mismanaging the situation when you're saying, I don't like the table tennis culture within this football club. It's, it's a bit like running Facebook. I don't like the plumbing culture in Facebook. I mean, it's, you know.
It's like being John Harvey Jones or something, isn't it? You're walking into a massive business. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Multi-billion, just walking past the canteen, seeing a table tennis and going, well, there's your problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. This is exactly. Money for old rope. Yeah. And a table tennis table.
James Ward-Prowse at the end of the game in his interview saying, well, that's ping pong. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Anyway. So Liverpool, Dave. You see, I will forever love Jurgen Klopp, and I think he's top manager. So I don't know. I think. Do you think there might be a bit of a thing here happening? And it's easy to say.
He gave them 2 days off after the Wolves defeat. He just said, "Go away, clear your heads. We'll meet up again." I mean, that's brilliant. That is just probably exactly what the players needed. Is rather than him balling them out, it's like, you know, you'd be so probably Nathan Jones would get them all in and roast them. You know, remember that time? Was it? I think it was against City. Who was the manager?
Phil, the manager,
embarrassed them. It was just like a complete embarrassment. Kept them all, didn't let them go in at half time. I can't remember.
Phil Brown.
Phil Brown. Good call.
Phil Brown. Well, it was Hull, wasn't it? At Man City. And it's just like, what are you doing? It's one of those moments. So it's like Klopp, nobody becomes shit overnight. We've been playing terribly, but there are all mitigating circumstances, and we've been through these before, not least the injuries. But, you know, you see a bench then, you've got Van Dijk, Jota,
coming back.
And Bobby Firmino on the bench. There was definitely a mentality change. The body language looked better, but I didn't see the match, but I watched the highlights. But the first goal, speed of thought. Again, Trent takes a really quick throw in, and they haven't got time. Everton are trying to reorganise. They haven't got time to settle. And I noticed that throughout. There was just this speed and urgency to it. And that's what's defined us over the last few years. You remember that goal against Barcelona when Trent took the corner quick and Divock Origi just whipped the ball in. And it's like you're seconds ahead of the opposition. And I think he must have spoken to them about that speed of thought, just... go back to the basics of just play quicker than the opposition, not literally moving the ball quicker, but thinking quicker. So hopefully, I mean, Gakpo looked awesome. He looked absolutely, he was going past, he got that goal that gave him confidence, but he was just, every time he got the ball, he looked dangerous. And there was that run in the second half where he just glided past players. He looked absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I mean, if Nunes can score, and Gakpo starts scoring, and we get Jota back, and Diaz is coming back as well. I think you know, not necessarily top four. I do think that's gone, but hopefully six at least, and maybe go deep into the Champions League. But I sound quite positive, don't I?
Well, I also think.
I'll just counter this just to conclude. I just get sick of the rubbish that people talk about. Liverpool fans, this is. Klopp out. Who are you going to get in? Brendan Rodgers. Oh, yeah, Brendan. High-flying Leicester. Get Brendan back. Get Rafa back. It's just like this list of names that we've already had at the club. And it's just careful what you wish for. Somebody even said Tuchel. well, he's German. Get Tuchel in.
You obviously know more about this than I do. Who's saying Klopp out? Get Brendan. Who is saying that?
Probably fake accounts on Twitter.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Run by Man United fans. But yeah. Some Liverpool fans, they're saying, oh, it's 7 years, he's lost it. Well, Klopp actually, I don't know if you saw his press conference, he addressed it.
Yeah.
He said, the circumstances at all my previous clubs have always been different. And Mans, I was ready to step up. Dortmund, I genuinely needed a break. I do not feel like I need a break now. This job is not finished. And I just think, for him to say that, he must have said it to the players as well. He's kind of reassured them, reinforced his position with them. And it's multifactorial, isn't it? Being successful. Everything's got to be right off the pitch and everything's got to click on the pitch, you know.
But it's not helped that you've been put up for sale halfway through the season.
Well, there's so many factors. This season's been a perfect storm of problematic areas for us, you know, on and off the pitch. But, you know, Klopp's, I'm not saying he's a genius. That's ridiculous. It's only football. But he's a superb coach. He's in the same league as Pep, you know. He's up there, you know. And he's won everything. He's won everything.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's just that it's that transition to. But the thing I was going to say, and we're quite similar. Like you, like one game doesn't make any difference. But I was thinking last night, and then after the Liverpool Everton game, I was thinking, you know, we read so much into football, and you think, well, is it just that the top teams are now coming into form at the right time? You know, is it as simple as that? And is it just that's what's happening now? And Liverpool are now going to win 10 games in a row.
Well, we've got Newcastle at the weekend and then we've got Real Madrid next week. So they're, you know, don't lose them or win them. And you could say, yeah, maybe we're turning it around, but we'll see.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, that's it's a brief one today. It's a bit of a nip in and a nip out. And we've only managed to cover our three clubs. So if you were hoping we'd covered yours, tough shit.
We covered Southampton.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, and yeah. Luton. So Southampton fans must be over the fucking moon with that. Yeah.
Luton got a mention.
Yes, Luton even got a mention, and a quick one for Stoke as well.
Apparently, Nicola Sturgeon is going to be the next Southampton manager.
mate, don't take the piss, because at the moment we'd take Nicola Sturgeon in a heartbeat. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Sturgeon and Strachan, the dream team.
But it's all right though, because we've got Scoobs as our manager. So it should be okay.
Cool.
All right. Well, look. Thanks for listening to The Reducer, the worst podcast out there on football. If you can find a worse one, let us know. Oh no, you can't.
You're such a pessimist. You're such a pessimist.
In all seriousness, there is a website where this podcast lives, and you can actually message us through the website, but I'm not going to give it to you because I don't want to fucking hear from anybody. Anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Dave Rothney.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. David Klein.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. It's been a pressure.